This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good Friday morning to you. Thanks for joining us here on Sports Map Radio. Yesterday, we spent a lot of time on Snowcopolis in Buffalo as this thunder snow is coming in, 4 to 6 feet of snow. And we were talking about the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns game and what they were going to do. I mean, how are they going to get this played? Well, the big news yesterday was they're moving the game. They'd now be in Detroit. Makes sense for Buffalo. They're going to play the Lions on Thursday. So the idea of shifting it, moving it, like maybe play it on Monday, wasn't going to work because of the short week that the Bills had for Thanksgiving. So it works out perfectly. They go to Ford Field. Cleveland goes to Ford Field. They'll play indoors, and then they'll have their game. I know it's something that people get a little worked up about because we like snow games and we like games that are in those kind of conditions. But, you know, in the end, it's about safety and it's about the town. It's about resources and everything like that. So, yeah, it's a little bummer because, you know, I like those games. I like those games that are wide open. But one of the things about snow games or games in heavy downpours, and I think it's what makes them so intriguing, is a lot of the elements and sort of the predictions that you have about a game don't just come to fruition, right? Like, let's say you're a strong running team. Well, in snow and wet and all sorts of those elements, that may be neutralized. If you're a strong passing team, it would definitely be neutralized. So a lot of the strengths that you may have going into a game on a indoor surface, they're just going to be up for grabs when it comes to these games that are in the extreme elements, whether it's high winds or wet conditions or whatnot. And I think that's one of the reasons why places like Buffalo and Lambeau Field and outdoor stadiums in the cold, there is an advantage late in the season when those weathers can start pouring in. You know, the Dolphins, for example, have to go to play New England in the cold, Buffalo in the cold, when we get to the later part of the season. And there's always a conversation about that. But I think in the NFL, they did the right thing by moving this to Detroit. I mean, it is looking really, really bad for Western New York. I mean, look, they know storms. They get dumped on all the time, that lake effect snow. But again, like I said yesterday, when they start talking about paralyzing storms, they're not kidding. It could be really, really bad. So the game is going to be in Detroit. Well, how about the Tennessee Titans? They have now won 7 of their last 8 games. They beat Green Bay at Lambeau Field. Says a lot about them, says a lot about Green Bay. We'll talk about that coming up next. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with 2 N's as we get you going on a Friday. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, a win for the Tennessee Titans last night as they go on to beat the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field. And now, Tennessee has won 7 of their last 8. And I said this yesterday. I think that when you have a Titans team that relies very heavily on Derrick Henry as their sole offense, that can be a little problematic in the playoffs. Not that there's anything wrong with Derrick Henry. I mean, he's fantastic. I mean, he's an amazing running back. But you've got to be able to throw the ball. And last night, guess what? They were able to throw the ball. Ryan Tannehill had 333 passing yards in a 27-17 victory at Lambeau Field. And he threw 2 touchdowns. And Treylon Burks, who is the rookie out of Arkansas, had 111 yards receiving, including 2 big catches. One near the beginning of the game, where they went down the field for him in a nice big play. And then the others just before the 2-minute warning at the end of the game, where Tannehill and the Titans were trying to basically get the game in the bag. And they went deep to Treylon Burks, sort of caught Jaire Alexander sleeping a little bit. And those were 2 big catches for Treylon Burks. Now, in case just to refresh your memory, this was a team that had A.J. Brown. They traded him in April. They didn't want to pay him what the Philadelphia Eagles eventually were paying him, in the $100 million mark. And they went out and drafted a guy in Treylon Burks who was similar in size, and they felt like, ability that he could become the next A.J. Brown. And if he was, then they would get him on a number of years on a rookie contract. But Burks had asthma trouble at the beginning of the season. He's been injured. So the dynamicness of him, his element to the passing game, wasn't really seen a lot this season. And now it has. And so, and then you combine that with Derrick Henry at 87 yards. He threw a touchdown in a trick play, a little sort of jump pass to Austin Hooper in the end zone. And the Titans now sit at 7-3. Now, we can get to the Packers in a little bit, because the Packers this season are done. They're not done in the sense that they're not going to win any games and they're going to have a losing record. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know this. You don't have to fear the Packers. The element of being scared of going to Lambeau to beat Green Bay and being like, well, I don't know, can you beat Green Bay at Lambeau Field? That's over. That's over. Teams are going there. They're winning games. They're controlling games. And the Packers don't have anything. And the idea that Aaron Rodgers can just grab this team, take them by the shoulders, and get them to the finish line, that's done too. So I don't know where the Packers are going. I have no idea if they go on a three-game win streak. But they don't look like a team that is threatening or to be worried about just on the element of having Aaron Rodgers. There's no connectivity between Aaron Rodgers and a number of players on that football team. But for Tennessee, this is a very, very interesting football team now. Because at 7-3, this is a team that opened up the season blowing a lead late in the game against the Giants and then got bombed out of Buffalo and were 0-2 to start the season. And since then, all the Titans have done is win 7 of their last 8 games. And the one loss that they had was a game in which they were very competitive, leading a lot of the game against the Kansas City Chiefs. They lose that game in overtime, and Ryan Tannehill didn't play in it. They were using Malik Willis, who doesn't throw to wide receivers. So, yes, the reliance on Derrick Henry would give me a little concern, because Henry can still run over you. He can still do great things, but we know in the postseason, you're going to go up against some dynamic offenses. And you're going to go up against a Patrick Mahomes. You may go up against a Joe Burrow. You may go up against a Josh Allen. You're going to go up against some offenses that can really put some points on the board. And right now, the big concern on the Titans is how many players they are moving in and out of the defensive lineup. They are a banged-up team, and they're getting good quality play out of that replacement. 24 different starters so far this season on the defensive side. But they went into last night's game as the top team against third downs. But Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, to their credit, converted a lot of third downs last night. But that is a defense that is really hurting, right? Without Jeffrey Simmons, they had Bud Dupree out. They lost Harold Landry at the beginning of the season. And yet they have found great replacements. But when you're going up against dynamic offenses, sometimes you beat them defensively, but other times you just beat them because you match them point for point. And I don't know if this Tennessee Titans team is able to match those teams point for point. Now, I'm not going to look back. When we get to January, and the Buffalo Bills are on the playoff schedule for the Titans, I'm not going to go back in week number 2 and say, well, it was a 41-7 win by Buffalo, therefore Buffalo. That's not how it works. And we know that's not how it works. You go through the ebbs and flows of your season. You go through the ups and downs. Sometimes at the beginning of the year, you get your, you know, you're getting your sea legs together. And then all of a sudden you catch a groove. It's not about repeating a matchup. That doesn't really happen in the NFL. If they play Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs again with Ryan Tannehill, I may not look at that game and say, well, with Malik Willis, they got the game to overtime. Why won't they beat the Chiefs with Ryan Tannehill under center? Because we know that's not how it works. So that being said, am I cautious about the Titans and their playoff chances to make a deep run and win the AFC and win the Super Bowl? Yeah. But last night was eye-opening in that if Treylon Burks works out enough, right, and they are strong enough to keep the clock moving in their favor like they did last night where they really dominated time of possession, then I think this team is a big, big threat to the powers that be that are on top of the AFC mountain right now, which, despite a 2-game losing skid, includes Buffalo and, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs. There is another team in the AFC I would be scared of, too. And it's a team that's starting to get noticed a little bit. I was glad Kirk Herbstreit mentioned it, actually, last night. There's one other team in the AFC that's not necessarily under the radar, but they are a real threat. Baltimore. Baltimore's playing good football. Defensively, they're not the Baltimore Ravens of old. But be careful of Baltimore. But now you're adding this Tennessee Titans team into that mix. And they were in the mix last year. They were the number one seed in the AFC. So they're not coming out of nowhere. They're not a surprise. They're in a weak division. So none of this is new. But what I'm saying is the same things that people were saying about this Titans team going into the postseason last year, like, hey, you are going to need to throw the ball. Teresa Walker said it yesterday. We had her from the AP in Nashville. You are going to have to throw the ball in this league. You can't just run Derrick Henry down people's throats and expect that to work all the way through and carry that to maybe a Super Bowl appearance and a Super Bowl win. You have to be two-dimensional, and you're going to have to throw it. So last night, I think, was a good opportunity to see a Titans team that can throw it. And Tannehill was really sharp. Just that play alone in the first quarter, in their first drive, when he hit Treylon Burks with a nice 43-yard completion. It's a well-designed play. They had trips on one side. He sort of breaks free, presses off the shoulder, goes off. Brilliant throw. Brilliant catch. Same thing. Again, catching the Packers a little bit sleeping, thinking they're going to run the ball to continue the clock, and he throws a nice pass downfield and kind of really did catch Packers sort of napping on the play. So am I saying that the Titans are on, you know, a Buffalo level? Like I said yesterday, they're like 1B. They're not 1A. They're 1B. But where would you have put the Cincinnati Bengals at this time last year? Maybe B? Not 1B, maybe 2A? 2B? So the Titans are in a good spot right now. They're rolling. They're winning games. They're doing the things they're supposed to do. They are keeping that defense together with string and duct tape and anything that you can imagine. But that's a great part of coaching. Is that, again, I've always said the one term I don't really like in sports. Again, sports is filled with cliches. It's silly. And one cliche I'm not happy, I never like, but I understand it, is next man up. Next man up can mean a lot of things, right? It does mean that, you know what, like, let's say Derrick Henry. You lose Derrick Henry, whoever's on the depth chart at running back has to be a guy that's going to step up and do the job. They can't be Derrick Henry. But next man up also implies that there's just replaceable parts all over the place, and we know that's not true. You lose your quarterback, your star quarterback, you're done. I don't care who the backup is. He can keep the ship afloat, but in times and moments, it's why you pay a guy $40 million and another guy gets backup money. Same thing with good solid running backs, good solid receivers, good solid offensive linemen, good solid defensive stoppers, all of those guys. The guys that are on the upper level, the guys that are the stars, the guys that make the big money, they're not replaceable with next man up. But next man up means that you just are asking people who are filling in to do the job as best they possibly can. And because you're a professional football player and a paid athlete, that might be good enough. And in the Titans' case, it's not so much cliche, but it is a reality. Yes, there are important people on the defensive side that they're going to need. Right? Jeffrey Simmons, Bud Dupree. Losing Harold Landry was a big deal. But a lot of the guys that have come in to replace them have done a really, really good job. So in a way, that cliche does work on the defensive side. How long? I have no idea. But this, again, is a Titans team to be watched out for. But to me, they've got two big games coming up. Two big games. And they've got a break now. They've got the Bengals, a team that beat them in playoffs last year, and they're going to go see A.J. Brown in Philadelphia in early December. The Chargers are still on their schedule. The Cowboys are still on the schedule. There are two games against Jacksonville, and for whatever reason, if I was the Titans, I wouldn't sleep on Jacksonville. They can scare you a little bit. But again, it's not going to be about how they close out the season, because to me, honestly, I don't care how many wins this team has. They're going to win this division. They're going to be a divisional winner. I don't care. The big question to me is not where they go for the playoffs, who they're hosting in the playoffs. The big question to me is, what are they going to look like going into the playoffs? Are they going to be able to have a dynamic sort of passing game to go along with the Derrick Henry ability to burst out for 100, 150 yards on you and three touchdowns? Can Ryan Tannehill still be slinging it to a guy like Treylon Burks or Westbrook-Ikhine? Those are my questions. But it was a really good sight last night to see this balanced offense And they just really handed Green Bay Packers, and the Packers made it a little interesting, but I never felt the Titans were out of control. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We'll get to the Packers side of things, because as I said, I just think that the mystique of Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay at Lambeau Field is done. As we continue, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, Thursday Night Football last night, a 10-point win for the Tennessee Titans. Look, and that's the first time, by the way, that Tennessee has scored over 24 points in a game. Going on to win 27-17. I feel bad a bit for Aaron Rodgers. I don't like seeing this team struggle. I'm not a Packers fan, but I hate the idea that, like, there's just not that mystique of Lambeau Field now. And you kind of felt it last night. They were booing the team at halftime, and I don't blame them. When you've had that long of success, right? I mean, when I was younger, there was a quarterback, Dan Majakowski, I think was the quarterback. Like he was playing well enough with Green Bay, but they really did not kick it up until Brett Favre got there. And then when Brett Favre got there, the Packers really became the Packers. It transitioned over to Aaron Rodgers, and now he's taken this. And Lambeau was always one of those places that you always had to account for the stadium, had to account for the crowd, and of course the magic that Green Bay would produce in those particular place. And now it seems dead. There just doesn't seem to be a connection of Aaron Rodgers and his receivers. Yep, Christian Watson seems to be the one that he goes to. But other than that, there's really nothing. There's no there when it comes to the Packers. Sort of to go back to that cliche. They're 4-7. They're 3-3 at home. The mystique is gone. Now look, is Rodgers good enough where one or two tweaks, you know, if they get something going, they can squeeze out a couple of victories? Yeah, but the reality of it is they're not threatening anymore, right? I mean, getting Randall Cobb back was a big deal, but they're not catching Minnesota. They're right now at 4-7. This was a big, big loss to them in terms of where they're going. The NFC is weak enough. That's the other thing. The NFL is weak enough that they may need to just, you know, maybe in order for them to get a winning record, I mean, they've got 11 games in the books with six more remaining, right? I mean, that's they've got to win how many games? Five games just to get to 9-8? They got to go 5-1 over their next six? That's a big ask. Miami Dolphins are on the schedule. The Vikings are on the schedule. The Eagles are on the schedule. You know, it's just, you can grasp at it. You can grasp at the idea that this is, there's some last slate season magic. I'm not going to see it. I don't see it. It's not a good football team. It's not a good football team. I was blown away on how in this game, how even though there was a moment where the Packers made it a 3-point game in the third quarter, and it kind of went back and forth. You know, Crosby missed the point after it and tied in the first, and then Derrick Henry had the run to give him a 14-6 lead. But I never really thought the Titans were out of control in this game. I never really thought it was that kind of dogfight. That was kind of my takeaway. It just never felt like the Packers were right there with them. And again, it was a one-score game for a lot of the game. And I give the Packers credit. The Titans would score like they did in the first, and the Green Bay answered back. They started the third quarter, the second half, with a field goal to make it a 5-point game. And then, you know, Derrick Henry threw the pass to Austin Hooper. That extended that lead to 11. But then Christian Watson caught a pass, and that tightened it up to 3. But then the fourth quarter, they were dead. And when Hooper caught yet another touchdown pass, there was no answer from the Packers whatsoever. So, yeah, it's definitely a team that there were a lot of high expectations, of course, but there was always the Devontae Adams question. There was always the idea of what they were going to do without him. How would they replace him? Who was going to have to step up to replace him? And it really looks like a team completely out of sync. Did you see when T.R. Tartt went down and Aaron Rodgers was so mad that he thought he was faking the injury?
Yeah.
It was probably my favorite part of the game last night. I was watching. Tartt is on the ground just like, oh, trainers are going to him. And Aaron Rodgers is like, bull crap. This is not true. This is not happening. No, no, no.
Get up.
Get up. Oh, Robert, I'm glad you know Dan Majakowski, too, the Magic Man. I remember him being a scary quarterback for a lot of teams back then. There were, like, some good football teams. Like, I remember my father and my Uncle Pete back in the day. They were, like, really nervous about playing the Packers. Those were the good Giants back in the day, the really good Giants, like the Super Bowl Giants. And Dan Majakowski, he was really – the Packers were not the Packers that we know of Favre and Rodgers, but he was a good – he could pull some stuff out of a hat, man. Magic Man Dan Majakowski. He was pretty good. So glad you remembered him, too. Glad he wasn't a figment of my youth's imagination back in the late 80s. but again, do I feel bad? No. I mean, you know why I don't feel as bad? Because you shouldn't be blessed with two Hall of Fame-level quarterbacks
right.
back-to-back. You shouldn't have a level of success for 20-plus years. Right? I mean, think about it. Remember, the Packers' run began a little before they won the Super Bowl, but they won a Super Bowl with Brett Favre in 1996, and so 97.
Yeah.
So you are talking 25 years of that team having a franchise level, Hall of Fame level quarterback. Now, it hasn't always been roses, right? I mean, Rodgers struggled a bit in his, you know, when he took over, but it was just to tighten it up and just be all right.
Let's and then the
it.
Final years of Favre going, I'm going right. to play. No, I'm yeah. not going to play. I'm going to play. I'm
and
not
that was
play.
Kind of messy.
Yeah.
But 25 years. Like, so, you know, I'm not cry me a river that they're struggling now. Cause I can't, you have to go back to Clinton being president for the last where you saw a Packers team was just dismal.
I guess the only downside to it all though, is that in those 25 years, it was 3 Super Bowl appearances, 2 wins.
2 wins. I know.
That's it.
I know. That's it. That's it.
That is alarming.
It is alarming. It's the big question on Aaron Rodgers' career, to be honest with you. It is. And yeah, Favre got to 2 and 1-1. That's all right. I mean, you get to 2, that's fine.
Yep.
But Rodgers never got back. And just imagine being able to walk around and making bets after Super Bowl 45. Like, you won't see him again in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right.
Oh, come on. No, I'll give you 10-1 odds.
It's the best pure passer in the league. What are you talking about?
Look what he did. Like, remember that year too? Because that year the Packers were like injury riddled and they ended up as a wild card team. But then they got healthy and you're like, wait, well, what? And they were just rolling through, because they finally were able to get back to normal and they beat the Steelers. But if you had said that, no, you're not going to see him again, that you would have won a lot of bets because that was the idea was it takes one and then here comes the snowball. And how many years was where he was either A, his team was either A, the number one seed in the NFC, or they were close enough where even if they had to go on the road, let's say San Francisco and whatnot, it was all the time.
I mean, how many home games did they always have?
Yeah, all the time.
I mean, and you always knew it's like, oh, the road through Lambeau.
Yep.
Like the roads. I mean, it's impossible to win there. Well, we make certain allowances because Drew Brees is a great quarterback, but we never hold him to the same standard of like, oh, the Saints only got to one.
Yeah, it's a very weird way we do that, because we have certain. There was a lot of expectations of what Aaron Rodgers was able to do, especially with all the talent that he's had around him over the years. But again, last night I didn't feel like it was a competitive game. And again, it was. The scoreboard said it was. Just that feeling like you're just watching one team just like, well, we're going to do this or this, and then in the end we'll just win. And I just felt that way with the Titans.
Oh, it never felt uncomfortable for them.
Yeah, that's a better way to pull it. I watched it. Like, even when it was a three-point game, I was like, oh, this is – and then Tannehill threw the interception. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, I see you, here we go, all right. And then it just didn't
materialize. I never got the feeling that the Packers were able to get it together.
Yeah, they just were off.
Like, they would have the break, like the defense gets an interception, you're like, all right, here we go. And then it was 3-and-out.
I think Kirk Herbstreit and Al Michaels were talking about this, they spoke to Rodgers, during the week, and he's like, he just wants to be on the same play. He says he just wants his receivers to be where they're supposed to be. And there were a number of passes where I'm like, that's 10 yards off.
Right.
Like, clearly that message hasn't quite gotten to certain guys. Right. But, it's one half dozen of the other with that team. All right. Later on in the show, we will go into the weekend that is in the NFL. Before we get to a Thanksgiving week next week, we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's a wake-up call. Sportsman Radio.
and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Oh, so again, we're going to the weekend in the NFL. We're at the penultimate week of the college football season before rivalry week. So, that, well, but you know what? USC and UCLA are playing this weekend because USC will close out with Notre Dame. USC, is Notre Dame their big rival, or do they look at UCLA as the big rivalry game? I remember, you know, it used to be the end of the season.
It's a, yeah, it's a crosstown rival game, but I know it changes for Notre Dame's schedule, but or yeah. Notre Dame, it's, that usually always seems like it was an end of the year thing, like back in the 40s and 50s.
I remember there was a big, I remember when one year Florida was like playing Arkansas in the SEC title game, and USC lost to UCLA, and it was kind of shocking. And I remember that helped Florida's chances of getting on top of the BCS standings one year. It's kind of a messy, one of those messy things at the end of the season. But yeah, but they're playing this weekend, and then they get Notre Dame. USC gets Notre Dame next weekend. That's the team to watch out for, folks, in the college football playoff run. That's the team to be careful of. Because if there's anyone that's, you know, we know Michigan and Ohio State, with one of those teams losing, it opens up a spot. Tennessee is sort of sitting in that position of, well, it'll just be ours after we roll through South Carolina and Vanderbilt. But the reality of it is it might be USC. If USC runs the table, beating UCLA, Notre Dame, and Oregon for the Big 12 championship, they might have the resume that pops up. Is it fair to blame, like, is it fair that the committee likes the way you play now compared to your body of work? Because they always said, like, no, it's the body of work. But college football has always been a what have you done for me lately kind of sport. Like, all through that. Remember the old adage, it was better to lose early than to lose late? Mm-hmm. Because you can overcome losses?
Yep.
Like, you could throttle teams all season long, but then you lose your finale, and you would be more punished than if you had lost in like week two, but then rolled and ran the table the rest of the way. It's just that the freshness of that loss is on people's minds, and I don't care if you're a committee member or an AP voter or a coaches poll voter or Harris poll voter back in the day. Then the freshness of a loss always impacts the way you see a team. Because it's a weird way to do it, because sometimes you're getting the rivalry game that you just can't account for. I mean, how many times, no matter what it is, Egg Bowl, Iron Bowl, Ohio State, Michigan, Apple Cup. I mean, like, name a million of these rivalry games. And how many times has one team entered that game ranked in the top 25, maybe one or two losses on the season. The other school is, you know, kind of down and out. They've had struggles, and yet they give you a fight, and they don't go away. And next thing you know, you're like, oh my God, why can't we shake this team? What's going? And then you're threatening. There's a threat to lose. See it all the time. See it all the time. Remember it happened last year with Alabama Auburn. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Or Auburn, it took them a number of overtimes in that game last year. Like, you never, the rivalry game is a scary game, because if you've ever been on a campus with where that game is coming up, right? It's everything around the week is centered around that, and you feel it as a player. Like, you feel like there's a bonfire, or there's the students are talking to you more, or there's something, the way the media is covering, there's more media that's covering your practices. They're doing a special bus ride that, you know, through almost like a parade almost. Like, there's all sorts of things that happen during rivalry week, and as a player, there's an energizing force that's coming. And even if you're a team like, it's your 12th game of the season and you're like 6-5, you can play up a bit in the rivalry game and scare the number 8 team in the country or the number 6 team in the country. Now, in Michigan and Ohio State's case, there have been times where one team has been a little down, not really Ohio State recently, but Michigan, and played them really tough. But a lot of times those teams are playing pretty good. You know, they're playing pretty strong. But sometimes I've seen South Carolina play terrible all season, give Clemson a fight. And I've also seen Clemson destroy South Carolina like it was expected to do, though, you know, to do. So, you know, but every now and then you can get a team that comes up and bites you. So USC, that's why I bring this up. So USC has got a quote unquote rivalry game against UCLA coming up at the Rose Bowl this weekend. But UCLA is 8-2. They're a ranked team.
So they've done a fantastic job this year. Then they've got Notre Dame that's playing a lot better. Right now, Notre Dame is ranked as well. I think they're 7-3. And so they're ranked as well. And then, of course, there's going to be Oregon in the Big 12 title game. Now, if you are the committee and you fell in love with Tennessee and Josh Heupel and Hendon Hooker, and they were blowing teams out, and they have a great win on the road at LSU, a team that's going to play for the SEC championship game against Georgia. They've got a win against Alabama in a hard-fought, big, epic offensive juggernaut of a game where both teams scored and both teams had turnovers and both teams capitalized on mistakes, and it was just a great game that came down to a field goal. But if you're the committee and you already have shown you like USC, it's not like USC is like, yeah, they're 9-1, but we got them like 18th. Yeah. No, you've already said you like USC a lot. They're ranked 7th. And then they put off, if they can pull off 3 wins late in the season against ranked teams, like, do you think the committee is going to still love a Tennessee team that in the last couple of weeks, what did they do? Lose to Georgia, blew out Missouri, blew out South Carolina, blew out Vanderbilt. And oh, by the way, didn't play on December 4th or whatever it is. Didn't play that game. Whereas USC did. I'd be really nervous if I'm a Tennessee fan right now. Actually, December 3rd is the date. I'd be really nervous as a Tennessee fan. And you know what? I'm starting to see it. That's the thing. Right? It's like I don't know how, I'm trying to think of something where you start noticing a little panic where the media or somebody is reminding you of how good they were. Like a politician. Like a politician's in a race. We just had an election. So a politician's in a race. And they think they're gonna win, right? They're an incumbent. They're gonna win by a couple of percentage points. And then you start noticing the campaign panics a little bit. Like they campaign in areas they've never had to campaign before. And all of a sudden they're showing up at places that was a lock for them like 4 years ago. It's like I'm seeing that with the Tennessee media, right? The Tennessee media, like, that cover the team are sort of saying, like, oh, and don't forget, that win at LSU matters this way. And that win against Alabama was this, and they put up this many yards on the Crimson Tide when nobody did this. There's all sorts of things that Tennessee media is now starting to do to sort of remind the rest of, like, America that Tennessee it has a viable season, a very, very good season. They don't have to convince America. They just have to convince the 12 people in the room that are voting for this. And you can't bribe them with posters and gifts like you can the Heisman. By the way, that was my favorite part of my career. When my boss had a Heisman Trophy vote at my first radio station I worked at and didn't cover college football at all. So I was working at a station in New Hampshire. My boss did not follow college football. And he would basically ask me and Dave Preston who he should vote for the Heisman. But he used to get packages. Back in the day, I don't know if they still do this, but if you were a Heisman voter, you would get packages of marketing material. And sometimes it would be really cool stuff. Ty Detmer at BYU, they sent out ties, like real ties that had the like BYU Ty Detmer inscription on it. There was one. Oh, Todd Marinovich. Remember him? Todd Marinovich, when USC was putting out his Heisman campaign, they sent out dollar bills, or bills, I should say, with Todd's face on it. It was fake dollar bills that said, "In Todd we trust." It was kind of cool. C.J. Spiller at Clemson, he was short. He was a short running back. I think it was like 5'8". And Clemson had a life-size poster of C.J. Spiller that was 5'8" or whatever it was for his Heisman campaign. That was always the best. But now, like I said, going back to my point, you're starting to see Tennessee media sort of reminding people, hey, 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 I know they're going to roll through these easy teams and we may not be on the level of what USC is putting together. Then, you know, but remind you, Hendon Hooker is doing this. The Tennessee offense is doing this. They did this season. They did that this season. They're one of the high scoring teams in college football. Like they're really starting to feel like the pressure is coming because again, conference championship games are really important to the committee. I don't know why they just are. They just are. They love them. They love you getting in them. Right? Remember how many times have we talked about this with the college football playoff? Right? Over and over again for forever where they said, "Oh, you know what? There should be no committee. There should be, if you win your conference championship, That's it. It doesn't matter how you get there. You get there. They're basically borrowing from other sports. And I don't think that's a bad idea, to be honest with you. I'm in the middle. I'm on the fence a little bit of it because I'm like, well, college football really, really wants the best teams to play for the national championship. But other sports go, well, we don't care. Win 111 games in baseball. Sorry. Right. Like it's NFL, same thing. Yeah. Oh, you went 13-4 or you went 14-3 and didn't make the Super Bowl. Boo hoo. What do you want from us? We're not gifting you a trip to the Super Bowl because you won a lot of games. And we as a committee think you're good. Here's the rules. The rules are you do this. But you know who would fight that completely? The SEC. You think the SEC would ever allow a college football playoff to be five Power Five winners and two wild card teams that come from the non-Power Five conferences? No, thank you. Greg Sankey probably says every day to everybody, you know, the college football playoff should consist of three teams from our conference. By the way, four, if you really want to get down to it, because we think Alabama should be kicking around too. So welcome to the party, Georgia, Tennessee, LSU, and Alabama. They believe that today. They have no room for Ohio State or Michigan. Please. TCU, are you kidding? The SEC would have it, if their way, they would have four teams in it. Every conference would. But in the world we live in of a playoff, the way the other sports are structured, where there is, here's the rules. When I was a reporter in New Hampshire, my first job, I always say before the internet, it makes me sound like I'm 70 years old, but it was before the internet. And I remember a salesperson came to me and she's like, hey, the Patriots could make the playoffs. We're like 3 weeks away. And I said, yeah, they can. And they did. They lost to the Browns. It was Drew Bledsoe's second year. They lost to Bill Belichick and the Browns, to be exact. But she said to me, she goes, I got some clients that are on the Patriots network, you know, that we're doing. And they kind of want to know what it would take for the Patriots to get to the playoffs. So sure enough, I'm responsible for looking at schedules in the newspaper, by the way, going through the schedules and looking through, like, okay, the Patriots need to win. And I'll never forget, I'm in the office and I have to make a phone call. And I call my father at his office. And I'm like, Pop, I have a problem. What's the criteria for tiebreakers? Like, how do the tiebreakers work? And he knew, because the Giants were always in these kind of things. And he's like, well, it goes this, then it goes this, then it goes this, then it goes this. I go, thanks. So I was putting it all together. Now it's easy. Now they're just throwing that all together. But it goes to show you, look, there are rules in place here. This is the rules. No debate. There's no arguing. There's no, like, you know, you don't have to write seven articles about who was robbed and who wasn't robbed. This is the rules. And there are people who want college football to adopt that. But there are also people who are saying, no, as much as the committee is subjective, I like the idea that they're pushing forward the best possible four teams they can. So Tennessee, just be careful. It's not locked that you're going to get in if you roll through your next two games. You've been sitting pretty all year. You've been loved all year. But do not for one second think that just by sitting at five, you're the first one in when somebody's out, because USC could be coming. Now, if USC loses, we got a different conversation. But until they do, we're in a whole different world. All right, again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. And so we can... Oh, my goodness. Man, we are. Thanksgiving is next week, man.
Yeah, it is.
I know. You know when it hit me? My wife and I were in the garage, and like she was like trying to get some stuff out for Christmas and whatnot that she's going to decorate. And I went into the freezer, and there's our turkey and the pies. And I went, oh, that's next. That's coming up. She's like, yeah, it is. Yep. My son's coming in late tonight for the week. So,
our turkey's sitting in there just.
I know, it just sort of
getting
goes,
ready.
Oh God,
you know, and I always forget. I mean, you got to make sure to take it out a lot sooner than you think.
Right.
And it's okay that it sits in the refrigerator for a day.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, like after it's already thawed.
You know what Gordon Ramsay said once in a video? And again, if you trust Gordon Ramsay.
Which I do.
He's a Michelin star chef, right? I was watching a video of him cooking turkey. And because I was going to cook Christmas turkey and I wanted a different kind of recipe than we normally do.
Right.
So I was watching this Gordon Ramsay episode. He said when he was young, he was in Paris and he was cooking for the masters of this academy. And they told him that for every hour the turkey is in the oven, that's how long you should let it rest. Now, I let the bird rest, but I don't let it rest for like 4 hours.
Yeah, I remember, I can't do that.
I can't either. I let it rest a good amount of time, but I'm not doing like, if that thing is in the oven for 3.5 hours, I'm not letting it rest for 3.5 hours.
No.
But he said like, that's the what the masters told him. They said, that's the best bird you're going to get. And I'm like, it's just too, it's too hard.
No, then all of a sudden you're that dad in Christmas Story where you're just cutting off a little slice.
That's a good point, right? Exactly. So it is Wake Up Call at Sports Rap Radio. Again, Thanksgiving week coming up. By the way, Ron and I will be off, we'll be on Monday and Tuesday and then off the rest of the week.